This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Oregonians are urged to get flu shots. President Obama will be campaigning for Kitts Harbor.
Who?
President Barack Obama.
Not Ted Obama.
No, yeah. Barack Obama. And South Korea has run out of kimchi.
I thought he handed that off to his son. Never mind. Doesn't matter. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, October 7th, 2010. Oregon public health officials are encouraging people to get their flu vaccine this year and said there shouldn't be any problems with the limited supply, as in years past. According to Paul Cieslak, MD of the Acute and Communicable Disease Prevention of Oregon Public Health, he says we already have a good supply of flu vaccine across the state. There should be enough to immunize everyone who wants to avoid getting sick, so people should go out and get it now. The immunization should protect throughout the flu season.
The what?
The flu season.
No. The what should protect them?
Immunization.
Okay.
Did I not say that clearly?
It was less immunization and more sort of...
I'm a little phlegmy this morning, and so I'm drinking tea, I believe I have a little... I may not be speaking as clearly.
What a pleasant word that is. A little phlegmy morning. Is there a blinking red and blue light over on your side of the on your side of the table there?
Actually, someone just called me on the phone.
All right.
Is what that is. I'll put this away where it won't.
It's not like it was a big
presence.
Distraction. It's just you're basically sitting inside of Spencer's Gifts over there.
Yeah.
And I didn't know one of the many Fun Employment radio toys had been turned on. And so we were going to get to hear music of the night blaring out of the bottom of the Phantom of the Opera statue at some point later on in the show.
Or the stripper clock would just start twirling about all on its own.
Yeah. What is this guy's name? Cieslak?
Cieslak.
Is that actually what his name is?
C-I-E-S-L-A-K.
Cieslak, which in my head, I didn't even get to the Mo Cieslak thing right away.
Sleestak?
Yeah. You went to Sleestak, and then I started thinking about, Ted Sleestak or whatever his name is, had this to say. And then it became a thing where he probably wasn't making that noise because he was probably Enoch the Eltrusion, who was the speaking Sleestak. And then I just pictured him sitting inside a pylon using the power crystals and saying, "But the time door can only let one family through."
What was his name again?
Enoch the Eltrusion.
I honestly don't know if I'm impressed that you know that or if I'm sad for you.
You can be both at once. You know, you're a multitasking adult. You're an individual with many, many parallel processing capabilities. You can have admiration for and pity for me at the same time.
You have that capability.
Where was I? Oh, yeah, the flu season in Oregon usually runs from the fall through the spring, but flu can infect people throughout the year. This year, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has recommended that everyone over the age of 6 months get a seasonal flu vaccination. Also, you should be, I don't know. I was going to go somewhere with, like, smallpox and bees, and it was going to be a whole X-Files reference that no one would get, and it just got all tangled up in my head.
Also, the flu shot just seems to be a little bit of bupkis, you know? I mean, I'm not saying I don't think it's a conspiracy, and I don't think it's a plot, and I don't think it's, there's nothing wrong with it as such. It just doesn't really seem to do a whole lot. I mean, I'm not saying they foisted it onto the public for some nefarious reason, but, I'm doing that thing where I'm reducing myself, I know that I'm doing a little bit of the, I had a grandfather who smoked every day and he lived to be 95. It's probably healthy for you. I'm just saying my whole life, I've never gotten a flu shot and I don't really ever seem to get the flu. I mean, I'll get the occasional, like the common cold or whatever, but that's not the same thing as getting the flu. I mean, the flu's more of a serious, kind of a hardcore thing.
Flu can kill you.
Yeah, and I don't, I don't really ever get that. So maybe that's just a me thing. Maybe I'm just made of some superhuman substance and I wasn't aware of it previously, but... I'm just saying.
I've only gotten flu shots twice. And I will say that neither winter did I come down with flu. But then again, there have been lots of other winters where I didn't get the flu that I didn't get flu vaccinations. So
yeah,
you can't really use that as proof.
That's the thing. Is like the correlation of your own wellness or lack thereof to whether or not you got a flu shot is really not any roadmap to...
Yeah.
I don't know. I just assume anything that they're basically giving away at Safeway can't be all that good for you.
Well, I think that I will say if you are someone who already has something going on, like a compromised immune system or some kind of an ongoing problem, that getting the flu could cause you to be like severely, seriously ill, like to the point of hospitalization, then why not? Get the damn flu vaccination. I mean, you know, it won't hurt you, we don't think. Unless, of course, you know, it is a government conspiracy.
Well, they say that, but isn't the flu vaccine where they're infecting you with a small amount of the live deal, or is that the polio thing?
No, but I think in any case of any vaccination, I can't explain it because I'm not one of those people that can explain this well, but you can go and you can look it up on the internet. What they're giving you is not the virus that will make you sick.
So
it is merely something that will cause you to create antibodies against the virus.
Or is that immunization? There's vaccination and there's immunization, and one of them is where they're giving you the actual virus, and the other isn't.
Well, if that is the case, then it would be immunization.
This is the one that's not doing that.
Yeah, I guess it would be immunization because just the word itself, it's not. They give you something, and then you build up an immunity.
We've spent way too much time on this considering that neither of us really by our own admission just now has any of, like even the vaguest idea of what we're talking about.
Right.
Hi there. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Thank you for joining us and drawing near that you might be more informed by the end of the hour. This is PDX.FM. Don't forget this program is available via iTunes later on today as well as a direct download here at PDX.FM or at legionofnews.com and on your mobile device as well. Available, beam directly into the palm of your hand through the miracle of science. That is at mobile.pdx.fm. Mobile.pdx.fm. Here is Dawn Taylor.
By the way, you should probably find, you will find a run sheet on the printer for you, which you'll notice is remarkably similar to the run sheet for yesterday's show.
Is it in fact just yesterday's?
It is indeed.
Okay.
But it'll still work.
All right.
President Barack Obama planned to help former Oregon governor and returning candidate John Kitzhaber's campaign in person later this month. The Kitzhaber campaign confirmed the president's trip to Oregon on Wednesday, October 20th, time and location to be announced when plans are finalized. The former two-term governor faces a tight race against political newcomer and former trailblazer Chris Dudley. The two faced off in their only televised debate at KGW last week, focusing on their proposals to fix Oregon's sagging economy and employment picture. On Wednesday, Obama, that would be President Barack Obama.
Not Chet Obama.
No. Is there a Chet Obama?
Not Aloysius Obama.
No.
Okay.
No, Barack Obama.
All right.
Mr. Obama, if you're nasty. was in New Jersey to ask wealthy donors to help him close an enthusiasm gap with Republicans 4 weeks ahead of pivotal midterm elections. Speaking at a small dinner fundraiser, President Obama acknowledged that Democrats are at a disadvantage because of the high unemployment rate, which he said would inevitably be blamed on the party in power. He said supporters should stay focused on the long game and chided them not to start sulking about Democrats' problems.
Is this like this is the fall of the last week when his White House's big advice was to buck up?
Yeah. Now it's and stop whining.
And quit your bitching. And fix me a turkey pot pie.
Don't make me turn this nation around. I will come back there.
And yet he just can't resist the politician's urge to gloss over things with the softness of language by calling it an enthusiasm gap. An enthusiasm gap is just nobody cares. That's just people are just sick of seeing your ass on television all the time. That's what the enthusiasm gap is. Awesome.
I just got the best message in the text box, by the way. Mm. Apparently, someone has turned on PDX-FM and tuned in and is listening to our broadcast, and they have signed into the text box to write, "What is this about?"
Do you mean life, sir or madam, as the case may be?
I think they want me to take time from the program to explain to them what the program is that they're listening to.
Are you entirely sure that they are querying about the program and not about the nature of their own existence as they hurtle through this void of life?
I don't know. They failed to actually put a question mark at the end, so it may have been an unfinished statement. It could have been, what is this about all this economy with the, what is this about a giant elephant that was marching down the middle of the street? I mean, there may have been more to the question, and then they just dropped dead from a heart attack or something.
I like the idea that they were phrasing it in a sort of Dada-esque way, though, without the question mark in the end, that it was as by just typing, what is this about, and then not actually using any closing punctuation, they have conveyed the apathy and nihilism that grips so many of us now in the early 21st century in a sort of in a sort of Lockean fashion.
Exactly. All right. Well said, Rick Emerson.
Here's your run sheet.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
An armored car dropped several bundles of cash at an intersection in Indianapolis yesterday. A car hit one of the bundles and the cash started flying. Most people were running after the flying $20 bills, but Tim Wentworth and his wife found three blocks of cash. I guess they mean
scattered for three blocks, probably.
No, I think you mean bricks that it hadn't.
Hadn't yet come apart.
And they held it for the police.
Everybody else was running out in the street, grabbing all that loose money, and the wind was taking it down Washington Street.
Washington Street is where that was going.
Washington Street. Right. Wentworth called 911.
Three great big bags full of money was all 20s, and money was all over the street.
This is, here's the thing about this, is by calling 911, I think everybody in this situation has the belief that if they call 911, somehow, even though you know this isn't really the case, that the cops will show up and they'll go, oh, just keep it. No, you did the right thing. Why don't you just take that and go home with it? Which is never going to happen.
No.
I would
just stuff my pockets full of cash.
See, and I wouldn't, because I would always assume that I was being, that there was some sort of college psychology experiment being run. That there was a hidden camera, just like right outside of my peripheral vision somewhere. And that I was just being, that I was an unwitting mouse in a giant life-size maze. And that they were using me, to create some sort of a psychological profile or something. Whenever anything like that happens, I look around in a kind of Truman Show fashion, just immediately suspect that the entire situation has been contrived just to gauge my reaction to things.
Good fortune. This must be a trick.
No, it's got to be a ruse of some kind. I mean, don't you automatically assume if you were just to find money on the street, don't you just figure that somebody is watching or somebody's going to see you picking it up?
Yes, and I would pick it up anyway. And then I would be very, very nervous for a while until I realized I'd gotten away with it.
I actually found...
And then I would spend it very carefully.
I found a... It was like a $50 bill. This is a long time ago. But I found like a $50 bill laying in the street. And I had this whole... And there was nobody around. Like, I was walking and it was laying in the gutter on the sidewalk or something. And somebody had just dropped a $50 bill. And there was nobody in the immediate vicinity. So it wasn't like anybody had... Like, it had just fallen from someone's pocket, like, moments before. So I bend down and I pick it up. And I swear to God, and I developed this, I had this whole sort of like ad hoc, I was like, I was like one of those family circus cartoons where there's a little dotted line showing all of the things Billy does during the day. Or I had the $50 bill, and I went and I leaned against a wall, and then I walked for like 10 feet, and then it turned around, and then I pretended to make a phone call, and then I had to like lean against a lamppost for a while, and then I was doing some stretching and just staring into the sky, pondering my day, giving anybody in the, you know, who was in my immediate surroundings many, many opportunities to come and say, hey, now, that's my $50 bill, boyo. Give that back to me. Just because I didn't want there to be any. And then I had this, and then it was just sort of surreptitiously almost just sliding it into my pocket and then walking on. And it really, I mean, it's like there was just nobody there. Nobody cared at all.
I went through this ridiculous, elaborate thing to return someone's wallet once. I found a woman's wallet in the parking lot at the grocery store. And, of course, she didn't have, there was her driver's license and stuff, but it didn't have any contact information for her. So, but I dug through and she had like something, and it had a little address book kind of thing with people's names. So I called someone in the address book and said I was trying to get a hold of this woman because I'd found her wallet and I thought maybe she might be a friend of hers. It turned out it was a friend of hers. I said, well, this is my phone number. Have her call me. So then she called the woman whose wallet it is. The woman called me. Then I went to her her shabby walk-up apartment over a bar in St. John's and gave her wallet back and then stood there for a second thinking, maybe she'll offer me a reward.
No.
And No. She did say thank you, but, yeah. You know, that was pretty much
it. No, your reward is the warm feeling of having helped someone in St. John's to buy more drugs.
Yeah.
That's really what it is, because otherwise she was just going to have to see if they could put them on their Oregon Trail card for her.
Yeah. But I think she needed that $18 more than I did, so I didn't rob her or anything, and I gave her wallet back.
Do a little, you were just doing a little Law and Order there. You know, actually just run, like looking through the address book, which is what the cop always does when they find a guy like beaten to death. And they say, hey, run all these names in the address book. See if anybody knows anything. That's way more effort than I would have gone to. Good for you, Don Taylor. You're a good person.
Not really.
You're listening to this show is about morality and justice. That's what this show is about, sir. You who queried earlier in the text box.
Someone else in the text box says that perhaps we need a snappy theme song with lyrics that explain everything, you know, like the Brady Bunch or Batman.
Or maybe we could put the general subject of the show in the name somehow. Or maybe there could be, since the person was asking us online, maybe there could be some sort of a website that might actually give an overview of what the show is about.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, just say Legion of News somewhere.
Or you could just ask the people who are doing the show, What this about?
You know, or maybe you could just stifle your overweening enthusiasm a bit and just listen, huh, friend? I mean, really, where are you going to be? What is so important in your life you can't hang out for like 9 minutes, figure out what's going on? I mean, really, do you have that many things going on? Are you that in demand that you actually cannot listen for 45 seconds to figure the gist of the show? I think we all know the answer is no.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying. You're listening to Legion of... Now I almost don't want to say it. Now I almost just want to create some totally fictitious, like, Potemkin 42 minutes for the remainder of the program just to throw whoever it is off the scent.
Turkey time with Petunia and Slappy.
I was going to say, just to drag out a recipe book and just to sit here and just to, just to roll out flour so we can, you know, so we can make some fine crusted bread stuffs later on.
It's the Winky Whizzle Good Time Music Hour.
Please tell me you just made that up from scratch.
I did.
Excellent. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. This is Don Taylor.
Kimchi, a signature Korean dish consisting of cabbage fermented in chili paste and a variety of other ingredients, is a staple in Korean cuisine. The spicy substance is often served as a side dish in meals or mixed into stews for an extra punch. However, due to a freak combination of weather that ruined this year's crop of Napa cabbage, the variety of vegetable used in the most popular variants of kimchi, prices for heads of Napa cabbage have soared from $4 per head to $14 per head, a 350% increase. This price explosion has led to some drastic measures, including kimchi rationing, and for one desperate kimchi craver, stealing 10 heads of cabbage straight from a field. So South Korea's turning to the Chinese. As an emergency measure, the South Korean government has temporarily frozen tariffs on Chinese cabbage to help stabilize prices in their domestic market. Thus, China's influence on the region expands even further.
Is this, now, maybe you already said this, but this is some specific kind of cabbage?
Yes, Napa cabbage.
But I mean, what do you know what the difference is?
I don't really know a lot about my differences between cabbage. I think the thing is that it's specific to kimchi because it's really, really hardy and really chewy. So you ferment it. And it soaks in the fermentation stuff, but it still maintains a little bit of crunch and a little bit of chewiness.
Well, if you say so. Because it's like, how much... Because just regular cabbage has a lot of snap to it. You know, it has a lot of... it's pliable, but it's firm. And it does have a satisfying crunch that it gives up. I mean, how much difference can there be between... This is really our chance to... this is our chance to step in, is what I'm saying. We perhaps were able to grow the... Because, I mean, $14 a head, that's nothing to sneeze at there.
But it is South Korea, though, and they don't like us.
No, that's North Korea.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh,
you're thinking of North Korea. No, South Korea.
North Korea, South Korea. How different can they be?
Well, I guess it's all relative. Well, in any event, this moment of cultural understanding is brought to you by Legion of News and PDX.fm and by Michael Beatty, the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. Anywho... If you'd like to contact Mr. Michael Beatty, it's 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. And the best thing really to do is to write that phone number down. That is to just keep it on your refrigerator, whatever it is, wherever it is that you keep your phone numbers. And you made the point yesterday that by referencing that sort of, and it wasn't a Rolodex. I don't even know what it was called. It was that thing that everybody's grandmother kept by the phone, and you would slide the little metal tab down to where, to the M or something, and then you would just press it, and it would spring open.
Yeah, it was an address book, but it had this little metal thing, contraption
It was like a weird informational jack-in-the-box. It would just fly open, with like 1,000 pounds of pressure, and just, it's an M, and it would just display all of the listings underneath that letter.
And when you were a kid, you'd stand there, and you'd play with it, and then your mother or grandmother, who was, stop playing with that!
My whole thing was to lure my brother down, directly above it somehow, and then press the button and have the thing just go thwap and just open right into his face.
And it had its own pen that came with it, and at least my grandmother's did. It had a little pen holder and its own little black, long, skinny black ballpoint pen that stuck there. And it was one of the worst pens ever, so no one ever used that pen. But it still had to stay in that pen holder because it was part of the set.
My grandmother had the whole thing where it was like an adhesive, base that would glue onto the phone, and then had this long, coily plastic cord, not unlike for your headphones, which then hooked onto a pen. And again, the pen was always ass. It was like one of those pens that they chain down at the bank that never works, ever, ever, ever. And it just makes a sort of unsatisfying scratching sound. And you look down, all it's really done is just imprinted the paper and left no actual ink behind.
So here's the thing. Did you have... Okay, everybody had the junk drawer, right?
Right.
In their house. Did you also have the cigar box full of pens?
Yes.
That did not or barely work?
Yeah, there was nothing...
But could never be thrown away?
And it was always just a bunch of, cheap-ass, clear, plastic Bic pens. They were almost unpleasant even to hold in your hand. You just pick them up and they put you in a bad mood immediately.
And there was that weird smell from plastic and metal and pen ink that came out of the box when you opened it up.
The bad smell and that, whatever the pens gave off, that was almost certainly overwhelmed by the odor of my grandmother herself, who, it was one of those things where I think she had actually died years before, but not all of her body had gotten the message. And so she continued to sort of walk around and hate,
See, my grandmother just smelled of rum and cigarettes and taboo perfume.
My grandmother was sort of a Bengay and stool kind of a thing.
My grandma was a lush. So.
Well, in any event, this recollection of all things familial was brought to you by The Cleaning Solution. So you just write this phone number down. You keep it on your refrigerator or whatever it is that you keep your phone numbers now at this point in your life. And whatever informational, whatever information-bearing device you might have with you. 971-533-3211 for home or office. Anything your feet might touch from carpet to tile, etc. 971-533-3211. Here's Don Taylor.
Someone in the text box says that they used the springy address book thing as a booby trap for army men.
No, that's, just to sort of fling them as a trebuchet for your small,
just
small
walking across here and, oh, no!
Yeah. Here is Don Taylor, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's do our science news.
Excellent. Science is on the march right here at Legion of News.
Since 2006, 20 to 40% of the bee colonies in the United States alone have suffered colony collapse. Suspected culprits ranged from pesticides to genetically modified food. Now, a unique partnership of military scientists and entomologists appears to have achieved a major breakthrough. A fungus is tag-teaming with a virus, and they've apparently interacted to cause the problem, according to a paper by Army scientists in Maryland and bee experts in Montana. Exactly how that combination kills bees remains uncertain, the scientists said. And that is the subject for their next round of research. But there are solid clues. Both the virus and the fungus proliferate in cool, damp weather, and both do their dirty work in the bee's gut, suggesting that insect nutrition is somehow compromised. Liaisons between the military and academia are nothing new. World War II, perhaps the most profound example, ended in an atomic strike on Japan in 1945, largely on the shoulders of scientist soldiers in the Manhattan Project. And a group of scientists led by Jerry Brummenshank of the University of Montana in Missoula has researched bee-related applications for the military in the past.
All right, maybe I've missed something here. You started off by talking about bees, and then we were bombing Japan moments later.
That's how it always happens, isn't it?
I've missed the middle steps there somehow.
It's a collaboration between scientists and the military that are figuring out what's wrong with the bees, partly because there are scientists who study bee-related applications for the military.
Such as bombing Japan?
No, such as how to use honeybees to detect landmines.
All right. Why were we bombing Japan earlier in the story? Where did that come from?
Because scientists did it.
Really? Why it was included in the story? Because it's the only other example of science that they could come up with?
Yes.
We're studying bees. Science does lots of things, like killing Japanese by the thousands.
Yes. Okay. Yes, pretty much.
I don't think that was actually the reason, but I'm not going to quibble. Go ahead.
Researchers on both sides say that colony collapse may be the first...
Did they throw in a Dr. Mengele reference there, too? Just, you know, as another example of scientists and their work.
The Tuskegee experiment is another example of how science and the military have worked together.
Okay.
Researchers on both sides say the colony collapse may be the first time that the defense machinery of post-September 11th Homeland Security and academia have teamed up to address a problem that both sides say might never have been solved on their own.
Okay.
So there you go. See?
I'm just going to nod politely and smile.
All right. We'll move on to another science story. An Australian inventor has taken out one of the world's most prestigious design awards with a bazooka that saves lives rather than claims them. Sam I don't know how to pronounce his name. Adeloju. Let's say that it's pronounced that way. Sam Adeloju last night won a $32,000 James Dyson Award, named after and patronized by the inventor of the bagless vacuum cleaner. His entry, called the Long Reach, is a modified bazooka that fires an expanding life buoy 150 meters out to persons in distress. Mr. Adeloju, who studies industrial design at the Faculty of Built Environment at UNSW, beat other designs from around the world, such as a vest that delivers CPR and a sports bag that eliminates odors. He gets to keep $16,000 for himself, and the other $16,000 goes to the university.
And yet the pen at the bank continues to not work. I mean, it's just a pen. How difficult can it be? They've got a vest that performs CPR.
I know.
Jesus, God.
The bazooka shoots a rescue device in a manner similar to the way the Army uses a grenade launcher to deliver flares. It hits the water and then activates...
You hope it hits the water.
Well, yeah.
That's... Hey, they're shooting something at it. No, it looks like a life vest. It looks like it's going to... Bam!
When it hits the water, it activates an expanding foam unit in the Long Reach Rescue Unit, which also incorporates LED illumination and a vortex air whistle. It provides the victim in the water with some temporary buoyancy and gives the lifesaver or rescuer time to assess the situation rather than rushing in and risking their lives as well.
I mean, really, it does make you wonder...
Here's a picture of it.
And that's the thing. Okay, so that is a sort of a shot of it actually being launched out of there. It makes you wonder how they're going to aim that thing so it is close enough that you're able to... Because you've been floating in the water for a while, you got to figure you're fatigued, you know, and so that it's not like they can be 100 yards away, you know, because you're not going to be able to paddle to it. On the other hand, they don't want to hit you in the face with it.
Right. And because, it shoots at 150 meters, and so if they're too far away, though... You know, just the slightest bit of inaccuracy, it could be like so far the person can't swim to it.
That's what I'm just saying. So it's like you're fatigued, you're not going to be able to, you know, but on the other hand, you don't want to just hit the guy in the face or anything. This is going to be like when we tried to help the Kurds by dropping food, except they didn't really know what it was, and so they would just stand underneath the thing falling from the sky. And
like
they go,
turkeys?
It appears to be some sort of a, I don't know, it's getting larger. One dead Kurd, you know? America's new secret weapon, the ham. apparently was some huge problem. We were trying to, we were trying to be the good Americans we know we can be, and just dropping thousands of crates of food out over the Kurds, and we were just killing them by the score because they just didn't know what it was. So these things always go through a phase of imperfection, though. What are you going to do?
Someone in the text box says that, to you particularly, you do know that a vest that can perform CPR could be used by robots to simulate the appearance of breathing.
All right, thanks for putting that in my head. I appreciate that. All right. I was just thinking about, dude, so well, you know, why would they need a vest? Like, if you're putting a vest on...
You would wear the vest ahead of time, and then if something happened, like you were electrocuted.
Oh, so it wouldn't be you who would wear the vest. Oh, I see. Okay, but I guess it makes more sense now, because I was thinking, well, if you're there, why don't you just help the guy? Like, you're right there. How lazy can you possibly be? Yeah. All right, Bob, I know you're not breathing right now. I got to walk to my car and get the vest. Hold on.
I think you would wear it in
You'd wear it in combat, perhaps.
Yes.
And then it would detect if your heart stopped beating, and then it would actually just start compressing your thoracic cavity.
Yes.
All right. There you go. That is, there you go, the science on the march. Are we,
we are done with science.
We concluded, there we go.
We are so done with science.
Science on the march on this Thursday. All right, here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Portland State University has partnered with Hewlett-Packard to offer students a new service that could help them save money on textbooks. The new print-on-demand machine will allow students to print the latest versions of textbooks at a cheaper rate. Lowering the cost of textbooks is a top priority for the school, said PSU bookstore president Ken Brown. The new machine will help the school achieve that goal. For example, a book written by a PSU professor dropped from $25 to $15 when printed from the machine. Students hope the ability to print on demand will eliminate the hassle of tracking down a specific book. Brown also said the machine helps the bookstore be more environmentally friendly. Instead of ordering hard copies of books that may just sit on the shelves, the bookstore buys a digital file from the publisher and owns the right to print it as many times as necessary.
Which I can't imagine that the publisher is going to be happy about in the grand scheme of things, because that's a full racket in and of itself, is the college bookstore and the required text that is like $75.
Well, one of the big problems, I was listening to a news report about textbooks, too. One of the big problems with it is there's no resource for teachers to find out how much books are going to cost. They have to, like, actually sit down and just, like, use Google and use the various websites. And actually, once they think about what books they want to use in their curriculum, they have to actually go seek out if they even care about that. And there ought to be some kind of, like, centralized place, you'd think, where educators could go to see, you know, how much of a financial load they're hitting their students with. But instead, there isn't. So therefore, they just tend to assign textbooks without thinking of what they're going to cost. And then you're a student, and all of a sudden, and plus, when you sign up for a class, it's not, you know, it's not there in the course catalog how much your books are going to cost you. So you sign up for a course, and then you find out that this particular class has $500 worth of textbooks attached to it.
It really is the whole... They're not even giving you the razor. It's like they're selling you the razor and then selling you a variety of expensive blades on top of it.
The 17-year-old Vancouver girl who died after being hit by a train last week was not walking on the tracks when she was struck, according to a BNSF railway official. Gus Malonis, a spokesman for Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway, told the Columbia newspaper that Mindy Doster was struck by a part of the lead locomotive that extends about 3 feet past the edge of the railroad tracks. He said the engineer confirmed that Doster was walking next to the tracks, not on the tracks when he first spotted her. But she was still close enough to be hit by the overhanging part of the locomotive.
Why would you possibly create a part of a train that extends 3 feet, presumably on either side of the tracks? You're not talking about the cow catcher thing or something, are they?
All trains are wider than the tracks.
Yeah, but not by 3 feet, though.
Well, but I don't know.
Even if that were the case, the trains were wider than the tracks, by definition, it would have to be the front of the train that she was struck by. Because otherwise, if the train was, you know, 3 feet wider than the tracks the whole way, you wouldn't be able to get close enough to it to actually be hit by it. So either she was hit from behind by the train, which means that she didn't actually at any point turn around and say, "What's that noise behind me?"
Well, she was listening to her iPod.
Yeah, but there's a train track that, like, 50 yards that if you don't ever hear the train that is outside our window, which sometimes you don't, like if we're doing the show or if we have music or the headphones are loud enough or whatever, you don't hear the train, you still know there's a train coming by. And that's like way over there on the other side of the street.
Well, perhaps in addition to having her earbuds in and playing her music too loud, perhaps, and I'm just speculating, It might be possible Mindy Doster was also stupid.
Okay, that's just your speculation. Rick Emerson isn't saying
we,
that.
We don't know. I'm just speculating. It is a possibility.
I was when you said that you know she wasn't actually walking on the tracks because we had the whole thing about the robots using the CPR vest to simulate breathing. My first thought was just the train followed her home. You know, just sort of skulking, you know, in alleys and sort of wearing a trench coat and, you know, ducking behind a plant when necessary.
Yeah, we have this train track right here by our office, and it has one of those signs that says, you know, some locomotives are automatically operated.
Remote controlled.
There might not be an operator.
Yeah.
And I always think that's kind of amusing because that is basically implying that there are people who go, oh, no, the train's coming. Ah, he'll stop for me. There's a guy driving it. He'll see me and stop.
Well, but there are those guys who, and you'll see this occasionally, where the arms come down to block the track. And then there's the guy who figures, well, the train's way over there. You know, I can surely make it across the track, you know, between now and then. And that guy probably in the back of his head, you know, is thinking that, you know, his getting across the track is more important than the train actually coming. Or that, you know, if push comes to shove, he has the right of way because he's in a regular vehicle and the train will stop for him.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, though, is, well, yeah, the train will stop. Because what I'm saying is that when they go to the point of telling you that some of these trains are remote controlled, the implication is that, but if there was a guy driving the train, he might be able to slow down and stop in time for you.
Well,
no, you should never assume that.
The problem, yeah,
ever.
Yeah, I know, but you're saying that as somebody who's not a moron. So I think the problem is that you're, I think you're trying to sort of put yourself in the position of the guy for whom that sign is intended, and really, there's no getting through the thickness of that skull. That's a guy that can't be helped. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock today. I'll be talking to author Bill Carter, who's going to be speaking at Wordstock this weekend as well. Also, our good friend listener Jenny will be on the show today to count down her top five. The top five. Let me be sure that I get this correct here. So this week, I guess, is the 20th anniversary of Pearl Jam's first performance together as a band. Apparently, back when they were still called Mookie Blaylock. So that was, that would have been, that would have been, 1990? Jesus, we're all so unbelievably old.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Sarah Dillon. I mean, really. I mean, more than anyone.
That's
she is
true.
The oldest of all.
She's old.
There's so many rings there, you can't even count them. They're like Saturn's bands. They just go on infinitely. But so in honor of Pearl Jam's first performance together 20 years ago, listener Jenny, who is a massive Pearl Jam fan, will be on the Rick Emerson Show today to count down the top five Pearl Jam songs you're a dick for not liking, presuming you don't like them. So if these five songs that, you're not embracement of which would make you a dick in any event. That is at 1 o'clock or shortly thereafter at the Rick Emerson Show, which is rickemerson.com. And if you are not currently subscribing to that, you can do so for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. And if that is beyond your financial abilities, you can call this phone number and leave us a voicemail. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. And let us know in 2 minutes, time or less, exactly why you or somebody you know should receive a 1 month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show. And we're giving away 10 of those every month, courtesy of our friends at New Millennium Landscaping and Maintenance.
And why wouldn't you do that? It's free.
That's right.
It's free. It's awesome. And it's free. Why would you not do that?
Are you asking me specifically?
I'm just baffled that anyone would not just pick up the phone and call and leave the voicemail message and get free stuff.
Any right-thinking individual would not take advantage of that.
Yeah, there's no downside.
That's right.
I'm just saying.
It's pure win, Don.
Yeah.
All right. This is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Delaware Republican Senate nominee Christine O'Donnell launches her first ad of the midterm elections. She tells her potential audience, "I am not a witch." O'Donnell made some comments about dabbling in witchcraft on the show Politically Incorrect, which Bill Maher used to host.
Hold on a second. I want to make sure that I have the right cut here, because I have 17 different things labeled O'Donnell, because she really is just the gift that continues to give.
Well, you wrote it down here as O'Donnell 01.
O'Donnell 01. So this is the latest thing we've got from her.
I think when you have to start your campaign ad with "I'm not a witch," the battle has been lost. I think she would have been much smarter to ignore that. But, you know, being much smarter is not her strong suit.
Well done, Bill Maher. That's why you should never erase anything.
No.
That's why I hold on to my show archives forever. Because you never know. Well, it's like when the guy, Michael, whose name is now escaping me, the guy in the Kyron Horman case who was doing the sexting with the mom or the stepmom or somebody. It's all, see, now it's all even, it's just become a blur to me.
Yeah.
But he was it with the mom or the stepmom that he was getting it on, allegedly,
the
or apparently?
Stepmother.
It was with the stepmother. But it turns out that guy was in he was one of the actors in a short film that I made a few years ago, which, not like I drag it out and watch it or anything, I keep all of that stuff, you know, just forever, because you never know when somebody is going to turn up on the news being let out of their house in handcuffs or whatever, and you want to make sure that you have a copy of the show on which they appeared. All right, here is Don Taylor.
The toxic red sludge that burst out of Hungarian factory's reservoir reached the mighty Danube River on Thursday after wreaking havoc in smaller rivers and creeks, and downstream nations rushed to test their own waters. The European Union and environmental officials fear an environmental catastrophe affecting half a dozen nations if the red sludge, a waste product of making aluminum, contaminates the Danube, which is Europe's second largest river. Officials from Croatia, Serbia, and Romania were taking river samples every few hours, but hoping that the Danube's huge water volume would blunt the impact of the spill. The Hungarian reservoir break on Monday disgorged a toxic torrent through three villages and creeks that flow into waterways connected with the Danube. Creeks in Kolontar, the western village closest to the spill site, were still swollen and ochre red days later, and villagers said they were devoid of fish.
So what was the actual starting point for the sludge? From where does red sludge actually come?
Well, it's a waste product from making aluminum, so yeah, it came out. This factory has a reservoir in Hungary where they dump all of their toxic overflow. And I assume they usually treat it before they release it out into the waterways, but it escaped.
Okay, so
it was an accidental
spill. So it's not a thing that they just release.
No.
Like, you know, every week or so when the levels get too high, they, you know, because hit the drain button, and then they just sort of, you know, release it into the...
Yeah, but it really is actually red sludge. There are photos of it all over the internet, and you can see it in, like, you know...
Is it awesome?
But it is pretty awesome.
I mean, in a sort of horrible, kill
us
all kind of way.
Horrible, disgusting, freaky out way, I said.
Okay.
Yes, I said that.
Okay.
Sometimes my brain just...
You've made that sighing noise
up.
Several times
have
today.
Have I?
Yes, you have.
I'm disappointing myself with my brain just not functioning the way I want it to.
That's going
to
be the second level to the Don Taylor drinking game. Every time you say Barack Obama, or every time you do this on the microphone, that'll be when you have to finish the shot and whatever it is right there. I have some audio on the sludge that we can get to next hour. See now you sound like you're in a Mentos commercial. Now you just like you've taken a bite out of a York peppermint patty and you're feeling refreshed. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm, available via iTunes as well later on today. And the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A Massachusetts woman faces assault charges after Belmont, Massachusetts police said she hit a motorist in the face with a bag of dog feces. Police said Tuesday that the woman, whose name has not been released, admitted tossing dog poop at a driver because she believed he was speeding. Belmont Lieutenant Rick Santangelo said the woman initially contacted police last week and reported that she was walking her dog when she saw the motorist nearly hit a man on a bicycle. Santangelo said the motorist contacted police the next day to report being struck in the face with dog feces. The woman was charged with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, vandalism to property, and disorderly conduct.
You know, the worst part is that the guy actually had to, maybe he didn't have any, maybe he really didn't have any choice in the matter since it hit him in the face. But that he actually was able to examine it close enough to identify it as being dog feces specifically, and then to call the police about it.
I think if somebody is walking a dog and they have a bag and it has some kind of poo in it, I mean, you know, your assumption is going to be...
I suppose. I'm just saying it's not a thing you want to think. That's a phase in your life you want to get done as quickly as possible. That is an episode that you want to put behind you, in the immediate future. Yes, exactly. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Thursday, right here with Legion of News.
Forbes.com released its list of the world's 100 most powerful women, and First Lady Michelle Obama topped the list. You know who she's married to, don't you?
No.
President Barack Obama.
So this is Barack Obama.
Barack Obama's wife.
Okay.
Michelle Obama, who is married to the president.
And who is who again?
President Barack Obama.
Okay, just check.
Oprah Winfrey came in at number 3, with singers Lady Gaga at number 7, Beyonce Knowles number 9, and talk show host Ellen DeGeneres at number 10. Actress and UN Goodwill ambassador Angelina Jolie charted at number 21. Inception actor Joseph Gordon-Levitt's older brother Dan Gordon-Levitt, who is a 36-year-old fire-spinning artist and teacher at Flow Temple Art School in Venice, California, has died. The actor announced the news about his brother on his Twitter account as he posted, "My superhero brother, Burning Dan, 1974 to 2010. A really old friend of mine had mentioned a day or so back on Facebook that a good friend of his, this guy named Burning Dan, had died of a drug overdose. And I saw this picture of it, and I was like, wow, that guy looks really familiar. And then my friend Glenn posted, like, the next day or something, that one point, like a couple of years ago, he was talking to him, and he said, you know, you look like you could be Joseph Gordon-Levitt's goofy-looking older brother. And Dan just said,
funny you should mention that.
Actually, what he said was, yeah, I could see that.
That's funny.
And he just let it drop.
He actually didn't even clarify it or confirm it.
No. But anyway, it's sad. Die Hard director John McTiernan talked to The Hollywood Reporter about receiving a one-year prison sentence for two counts of making false statements to the FBI. The filmmaker admitted he hired private detective Anthony Pelicano to illegally record movie producer Charles Roven's phone conversations, and he lied to authorities about his actions. McTiernan, who is currently free on bail, plans to fight the ruling. "We're already filing the papers," said the director. "I've already paid the appeals lawyer. I didn't start this appeal because I was afraid to go to jail. It would have been much easier to go to jail and less expensive. And some of the minimum security prison camps are not bad, and there are actually interesting people there. And I've managed to live my life not being too afraid of new experiences, including going off to federal prison for a few months."
Well, all right.
"That isn't why I started this fight," he said. "I started because these people have less respect for the law than they accuse me of having." So I'm a little confused, though, because he admitted he did it.
Right.
But he's appealing.
Well, yeah, I have no real explanation for that. I was just going to say that I'm busy being, maybe this is the point of the statement, I'm busy being distracted by his sort of, you know, life gives you lemons and attitude toward it. You know, like, well, hey, I've never been to prison, so it's a thing I can check off my sort of, you know, my experience bingo card.
Yeah. Elmo Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch have made some new West African friends who are ready to expand the Sesame Street family. The Nigerian version of Sesame Street, the latest in a long line of region-specific shows, will be hosted by Cammy, a female Muppet who is HIV positive, has golden hair and a zest for adventure,
and asks you for money constantly over the internet.
And Kobe, an energetic, furry blue Muppet whose mischievous escapades help others to learn from his mistakes. With a population of over 150 million, nearly half of which are under the age of 14, Sesame Street will address the major challenges facing the young African community today, including AIDS, malaria, gender inequality, and religious differences, as well as the many positive aspects of Nigerian life. In the case of Zobi, he has an obsession with yams, a traditional food in the Nigerian diet.
Is this really the best? If you want to talk about just the apparently sad state of that nation, is this the best they can come up with for what makes living in Nigeria great? That you have yams? That's the win column in Nigeria, yes. Is that there's a squash-like food that is available to you.
Well, there's all the raping and the HIV and the malaria.
So it's all relative.
But we have yams.
You take your smiles where you can find them, Don.
James Burns, a 29-year-old Seattle man behind a campaign to break up the band Weezer, is asking the world to donate $10 million. Why? So he can break them up. Though the band's success seems to be on the decline since the release of their early albums, Weezer has persisted, releasing 8 albums in total, with a 9th, a collection of previously unreleased material, due out November 2nd. The problem, Burns says, is that the music is awful. "This is an abusive relationship, and it needs to stop now," Burns writes on the campaign's website. "I'm tired of my friends being disappointed year after year. I'm tired of endless, whimsical, cutesy album covers and music videos." Burns plans to offer the $10 million to the band members as a consolation prize of sorts, begging the group to take our money and disappear. As of now, a breakup, but by way of a multi-monthly million-dollar payout, seems unlikely, as only 1% of Burns' goal has been pledged, but it hasn't lessened the humor of his project. Weezer drummer Patrick Wilson said that the band would do a deluxe breakup if Burns upped his fund to $20 million.
By the way, and here's the reason why this this guy obviously has not thought it through, because my first thought, and probably the first thought that many people have, is that this is in fact just something Weezer themselves are behind. Mm. I mean, that's the great thing about being those guys, is that it's impossible. One can never ascribe any degree of seriousness to anything like this, because you just assume that Weezer themselves have actually done it. You're listening to Entertainment News, brought to you by, among other people, Squires Electric, one of our brand new business partners. Squires Electric, you can find out more about them at squireselectric.com. It is squireselectric.com. You can also call them. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are fully licensed and insured and bonded electrical contractors, which means they can come to your home, come to your office, and they get, because your house is just filled with not so much creeping sludge as it is just creeping menace, and your walls are filled with things that, if handled correctly, even for an instant, are going to lead to the worst day of your life. And so, really, why should you risk your own hide on that? Especially since you're really just navigating within inches of death at any moment if you decide, look, somebody's got to tell it to you straight. Somebody's got to give it to you, you know, with just no chaser, and lay it out the way it is. Your walls are filled with what are effectively miles and miles of electric snakes that are just poised at any moment to do you the most egregious and grievous harm. And I wouldn't tell you that if it wasn't true. And Dawn, you know that this is the case.
I
were sharing this observation yesterday. Your walls are filled with a kind of peril that your mind can scarcely imagine. But fortunately, you don't have to deal with it. It's not a thing you actually have to involve yourself in. All you do is you pick up the phone. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. And somebody actually offered to send me a copy of the Bob Vila, you know, the Kitchens and Bathrooms book, which I do have my own sort of lurking in the basement of my house somewhere. But that was a thing an entire generation purchased via a 1-800 number on television, which, when you think about it, it's sort of amazing that there wasn't any kind of a class action suit ever leveled against that guy. Because if you were to watch the television ever, the Time Life series, I mean, Bob Vila was basically standing there with what was a glorified pamphlet. I mean, it looked like it was about 30 pages long, and then he had a screwdriver in his other hand, you know, and then he was just, you know, and then he was just heading right for the power supply in the basement of his house. And that just ends badly. There's no good way that comes out for you. So you don't even screw with that. It's free estimates. It's not going to cost you anything up front. They'll come out. They'll take a look at it. They'll let you know exactly what it's going to cost. There's no job too small, no job too large. So whether it is whether it's a house, whether it's a business, whether you're getting something repaired or upgraded, whether you're installing one of those solar panels that seem to be all the rage now with President who?
Barack Obama.
That's right. You can talk to Squires Electric, and they will let you know up front what it's likely to cost you, and they'll make sure that it's done right the first time as well. So you're not going to have to make endless trips back. You're not going to have to get it adjusted. You're not going to have to get it installed and then figure out why it's actually not working. They do it right. They do it right the first time. Your problem handled.
And those death-making magical snakes won't kill you.
That's what I'm saying. And then they, you know, then they are recused back into their place. 503-252-1609, SquiresElectric.com. Here is Don Taylor.
More in entertainment news. One highlight of Wall Street Money Never Sleeps is the reunion between Bud Fox and Gordon Gekko. Director Oliver Stone explains why Bud Fox has turned into what the director describes as a sybarite.
Have you seen the... A sybarite, by the way, is not what you're probably thinking it is. It is not a sexual pommel horse designed for women.
That's exactly what I was thinking, too.
Have you seen Oliver Stone lately?
No.
It's just... He's got that whole... He's turned into... He's turned into Bob Dylan. He's got that weird, like, he's turned into Bob Dylan, and specifically the Bob Dylan where he looks like Jack White impersonating Vincent Price. You know what I'm talking about? Where he's got like the weird, like pencil thin, like the Peter Lorre mustache kind of thing going on. It's all very strange looking. Let's see if I've got the...
I'm going to look and see if I can find a current picture of him to see.
It's one of those things where... What looks sort of interesting and what looks, artistic when one is at a certain age, then just becomes strange looking at a certain point. And you look like a guy who doesn't get out of his house nearly often enough and who is surrounded by people who don't want to tell him he looks silly. Let's see if I can find the actual soundbite here of Oliver Stone.
Well, Charlie Sheen comes back into the movie. It's a nice little scene. It's just a small cameo for Charlie. But you see them meet up later in life because Charlie is the one who put Gordon behind bars. And it's just a repartee at a party. Charlie has become, Bud Fox's character has become everything that, in a sense, he didn't want to become. I mean, he became a sybarite. He loved the money, too, Charlie. He went to jail a little bit. He did some time for putting the wire.
Are we talking about Bud Fox now or Charlie?
But he didn't really learn the lesson.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I'll let you judge that.
All right. I just looked up Oliver Stone and saw another picture of him where he looks for all the world like Steven Seagal impersonating David Niven.
I didn't see any of the pictures with the little mustache, but right. I don't want to look at Oliver Stone.
He's sort of David Niven if you hooked him up to some sort of a force-feeding hose and just let it run for 5 or 6 years.
New on TV tonight, we have episodes of Community, Big Bang Theory, 30 Rock. We also have on the Discovery Channel have a new episode of River Monsters. Tonight, the episode is Rift Valley Killers. Jeremy goes to Africa's Rift Valley in search of the Nile perch, which can grow to 8 feet long and weigh 500 pounds. It's a perch that weighs 500 pounds. There's also a new episode of The Apprentice, in which the teams produce a viral advertising video, but efforts don't click in this internet-based task because of the ostracism of one member, a dental emergency, and the portrayal of violence in one of the videos. Oh, and there's also, I believe there's some kind of a sporting event. Oh, yes, a baseball playoff game, Yankees at the Twins. For those of you who enjoy the ball sports. That's it.
Okay, there you go. There's your entertainment news for Thursday here at Legion of News. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show is also coming up shortly after 1 o'clock today. And we'll be talking to author Bill Carter. We'll also be having listener Jenny into the studio to count down her top five Pearl Jam songs that you are a dick for not liking. But I got to phrase it. I don't think that's actually the way that it's phrased, because it sort of presumes it operates from a default assumption that you don't embrace the songs. So I got to figure out exactly how she's wording it.
She means more that if you don't like it, you're a dick.
Yeah, but how do you, you know, but how do you say that? How is it that you actually lay out the sentence so it conveys that sentiment?
Top five Pearl Jam songs.
The dislike of which would make you a dick?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, so that's basically what it is. So that's coming up shortly after 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
Washington state consumers started paying more for soda, candy, and gum this year amid a nationwide push to impose higher taxes on sugary foods. But the soft drink industry is fighting back. The industry has spent more than $14 million in counting to overturn the Washington tax in a November ballot measure. The industry hopes to stop the movement dead in its tracks in Washington and send a powerful message to states contemplating similar efforts. Several states considered raising taxes on candy and soda this year, but those efforts gained traction only in Colorado and Washington. Congress briefly considered a soda tax as part of a health care reform, but the idea was dropped after heavy lobbying and spending by the soda industry and other groups.
This is like that thing where they were going to start taxing lattes, and I'm unsure about whether they ever did it or not. It was going to be in King County, it was going to be in Seattle, and then sort of spread out throughout Washington. But it was going to be a tax on, it was going to be effectively a Starbucks tax, they called it, but it was going to be on upscale coffee beverages. And they were going to single out that food item among all others for some sort of a specialized tax. So I'm always intrigued by things like this, where they want to find something, because the implication is always that, like, you're a bad person if you consume it, and so therefore it's right that you are punished by being by having the tax raised on it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything to say. I'm baffled. That's got my whole brain all befuddled now, because I'm thinking,
you were squinting at me just there. You know what your squint looked like just now? You looked for all the world as though you were Matt Dillon in the movie Singles. when he's just sitting there and he's reading the review, and Eddie Vedder is sitting across the table from him or whatever, or Eddie Vedder's reading the review and he's squinting and he's just doing that thing of nodding his head, and he's got his eyes, and it's like you can just tell he has absolutely no idea what he thinks about it.
Yeah, because there's the whole idea of taxing some food and not taxing other food. Yeah, there's a value judgment attached to it. Because, like, there have been a number of places that have decided to do snack food taxes. But then you have to make the decision of, you know, what qualifies as a snack food and what doesn't.
Well, because, and the implicit assertion there is that you're, like, if you complain about it, you know, it's like, well, what does it matter? You're just some fat bastard whose opinion doesn't count. It's the same reason they can just tax, they can just tax cigarettes and whores.
Yeah, and I guess to a degree, I mean, why not? They are luxury items. They are not necessities of life. But on the other hand, I don't know. See, now I'm just all confused and all thinky. Rick Emerson. You've made me all thinky.
Well, you know, Don Taylor, as you age, your brain slows down. If you're Sarah Dillon, for example, I mean, it's effectively stopped processing at this point, I would imagine, for her.
She's turning, 50 Saturday?
I believe it is 50, and she looks great for being 50.
She does.
You know, but as one's brain just sort of flakes away into nothingness and becoming a totally inert mass, you know, one reflects on the things one could have done in one's life to forestall that enfeebling. And among them is learning another language, a second language, maybe a tertiary language, depending on what you've learned in the past. Find out more about how you can learn Spanish in a way that is low impact, as they say, and where you can learn at the same rate in the same way as the other people in the class. You want to go to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. That is how you contact Castalia Language Center. They are a proud sponsor of Legion of News here at PDX.FM. And Clara Grebel, who is the woman who runs Castalia Language Center, actually caters to adults, and she does that not just in terms of the way they teach the class, but in terms of when the class is offered. So it, you know, whatever day of the week works for you, whatever your Spanish acumen might be at this point in your life, they can find something that interfaces with the way you, and by you I mean Sarah X. Dillon, the way that you need to learn. So, you know, even if you've reached such an advanced stage in your life that your brain is basically just there, you know, to fill up the space inside your head, like some sort of a like some sort of a fleshy packing peanut, you know, it's not too late for you, Sarah. I mean, I'm just you seem relatively spry. I mean, for someone at your stage of life, so it's never too late, is my point. So you contact Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. Please do tell them you heard about it here. That is PortlandSpanish.com. That's how you contact Castalia Language Center. On that note, it is time to bring the curtain down on this episode of Legion of News, which comes to you each and every weekday right here on PDX.FM from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and our chief of staff is Cheryl Kennecoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.FM.